Ja, ik ben hier in Derby, in Derbyshire, Engeland. En ik heb even een pint besteld. En yes, sir, pass on through if you want. No? It's all right? No, it's okay. Don't worry. En ik ben hier voor een interview, ben ik voor gevraagd om te doen met Gareth Icke, die van de website iconic.com. En inderdaad, Gareth is de zoon van David Icke. En we hebben net een interview gedaan en die gaan we nu vandaag uitzenden. En je weet, we zijn van God naar Her aan het gaan met de roadtrip. Dank jullie wel voor jullie support, donaties, dat we dat kunnen doen. We zijn heel even gestopt hier. En het interview is in het Engels, dus we hebben het ondertiteld ook voor jullie. En terwijl ik hier in deze hele klassieke pub even van mijn pint ga genieten, hoop ik dat jullie genieten van het interview bij mij voor of met mij voor iconic.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bring the Fire. Today I'm joined by Robert Jensen. Robert is a Dutch television presenter and talk show host who was a household name, or is a household name, in the Netherlands before speaking out against the government during the pandemic, which, as you know, gets the mainstream media up in arms against you. Robert, it's great to have you with us, mate.
Nice.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Always wanted to be on InfoWars, so thanks for inviting me,
yeah.
Alex. Thanks, Alex, for inviting me.
I'll start selling some supplements shortly.
What the hell happened to Alex Jones?
Mate, I met him a few times, and I'll be honest with you, I always got on all right with him. Because him behind the camera and him, like, when the camera's not rolling, was the same bloke.
Mm.
And I actually respected that in a way, because I'm like, it's not an act.
Must be fatiguing you a little bit.
Well, what's going on now? I don't know.
I have a theory. So, like, anyone in the position that you don't understand, why are they saying this? I mean, Trump, Kennedy, Alex Jones, I mean, they're all in the same boat. They're under pressure. I mean, Alex Jones, what's hanging above his head is like $1 billion+...
Yeah.
You know, penalty, he's going to go to jail, he's going to lose his business, he's going to lose everything. So what he's angling for is a pardon from the president. So that's the only way he can get out of it, by Trump pardoning him. And so Trump, of course, the way he is, won't give him the pardon at the beginning of his presidency or his second term. But he'll wait till the end so that he can get the best coverage that he can get out of him.
Yeah.
And so he has to play along. But, you know, he's losing his base and he's losing, you know, the critical thinkers.
Big time.
And he's just hoping for that pardon. And that's why it's his only way out. Same for Trump, you know, with all the lawsuits, all these ugly women that he sexually assaulted. And he's convicted of. And so he can give himself a pardon at the end. These guys are just basically coasting and trying to make it to the end, promising a lot, but not delivering. But that's why you don't understand any longer why they are so inconsistent.
I think the Sandy Hook thing, there's definitely a connection. I think also if you look at, say, something like Russell Brand, who came out massively pro-Trump, he's got, the sex allegations against him. Tate, who came out pro-Trump, has got all this stuff going on in Romania as well. I mean, I'm not a coincidence theorist, but it does feel like people are over a barrel maybe to keep trying to push Trump massively.
But because in reality, they are over a barrel. They are.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine having $1.2 billion?
Those numbers were insane.
Those were insane. It was a joke. But it does put a lot of pressure on a person.
Yeah, yeah. And of course he had InfoWars taken off him and then it was given back. And yeah, the whole thing's very, very strange. In terms of your career though, Robert, can you give us a bit of a summary of how it started? Because you were obviously a household name, you were doing a talk show in the evening, massive. What was your path to get to that point?
Yeah, in the Netherlands, I started out on the radio because I was one of those 8-year-old kids who did radio shows up in his room, and I wanted to do one thing. I wanted to be a DJ on the radio, you know, when that was still a huge thing. So that's how it started. I went to Canada a bit and worked on the radio there, and then I came back to Holland and quite quickly became successful in as a DJ, you know, doing an afternoon show, afternoon drive.
Right.
And, yeah, from the moment you start being successful on radio, they always come, the TV channels always come to you and they want you to do a TV show. And I never wanted to because I'm a radio guy. And I hated people in television because I thought they were vacuous, stupid. I hate showbiz in general.
Right.
And that's why my radio show was also different because I always took the piss out of showbiz. But then at some point I thought, okay, maybe it's a challenge. Let's do it. So they offered me 6 shows, 30-minute talk show. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to do it on TV, I'll do like the American style, you know, Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, but my own way. So instead of having the cookie clutter questions and the prepared shit,
yeah,
I'll do it my way. And we'll have honest conversations, but funny. And we'll see how far we can put it. But I thought 6 episodes, that's going to be it. They programmed it at on Friday nights at on a smaller station at 8:30. And it was up against a drama series at the time that got better ratings than the Dutch national football team
when they were playing.
So it was like, it was impossible. But somehow the first episode worked really well. And we came in like second of the night. Second show, I had this politician on who I had on the radio before, a very controversial guy, but he was looking like he was going to be the new prime minister of the Netherlands. So that was Pim Fortuyn. I don't know if
him. Yeah. I recognize the name. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was the second guest, and that was such a spectacular interview because he didn't speak like a politician, because he wasn't like a politician, but he was like, no, a better version of Trump 20 years before Trump.
Okay.
And he was gay. And we talked about, you know, everything about his sex life, everything, and also about politics. But he'd gotten a lot of death threats at the time already.
Really?
And a month and a half after that interview, he was shot and he died.
Wow.
And he was leading in the polls. It's funny how people, a lot of people in England still remember him.
I recognize the name, but I couldn't have said where, but now, geez.
Yeah, it was so surreal. And that morning, he was leading the polls in the Netherlands. He was going to be the next biggest party in the Netherlands. And he did it by himself. He started his own list for Fortune, Lijst Fortuin, that's what it was called. So he was the second show. So I don't know, for some reason those 6 episodes did very well. So I continued on the radio, but they wanted more TV shows, And at the end, I did a daily Monday to Friday show for many years. And that was very successful, especially with the younger audience. And so I did that for about maybe 12 years. And then I got tired of it because, I was never...
You never really wanted to do it anyway.
Never wanted to do it. And I hate show business and I hate actresses and actors. And some of them were cool, especially the big international ones were cool. But I had to interview a lot of local dimwits who were on soaps, who had nothing to say. And then I had to make the show, of course. I had to try and make it funny. So I was tired of it. And then I started to look for different angles. And in the end, I found one when I took, because sometimes I take years off just to find, you know, some new inspiration or, you know.
Rejuvenate yourself, I guess.
Reinvent. And that's a tough thing to do. But that I always give myself over to something bigger, and because the old thing doesn't work for me any longer. So, but I trust that I'll find it. And I spent a lot of time in the States. It was 2015. And then Trump came down the escalator. And I found spending a lot of time in the States, even though I used to love going to the States, I found it dead after the Obama years. And I also talking to people, there was no energy in the States, not the way I remember it. And also the people who live there, they said, we're on our knees. And I got to understand more why they were saying that. And I also know
a few things about America that most Americans don't even know, that America is not L.A., New York. No, it's the bit in between.
Yeah.
And it's quite a big bit.
Yeah.
In a large area. But that sort of inspired me. So actually, Trump inspired me. And for one reason only, is that I hated the news media. Always. All my career. Because I know how media works. You know, when you work in it and you know the people and you see the games that are being played, and even being played with me, being famous in the Netherlands, I hated it. But when I saw how they were attacking Trump, and with so many lies, and what I liked about him in the beginning, I really think this is something that was a good service that he provided for us. He fought back. He was the first person who fought the media, the mainstream media. And I think a lot of people were exposed and already knew, but it was exposed even more how biased it is and that there's a game plan behind it and everybody groups together. So I liked that. And so I thought, okay, that's what I want to do now. I want to basically expose how the media works. And always what I used to do, but in a smaller way, I want people to be able to say whatever they want, whether it's politicians that are banned from the mainstream, come on my show and talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, for example, Geert Wilders, complete idiot, but I was the only show he came on because I let him speak. And it's not that I agree with him, and it's not that people call me a right-wing talk show host at some point. But I was not. It's just, I wasn't left-wing.
Yeah, you're no wing.
No wing. Speak. Come on, speak. I hate censorship, and I hate media bias. I hate it all, to my core. And so first, coming back from that old talk show, entertainment talk show, I did a documentary, three parts, before the election of 2016, where I showed the Netherlands, by traveling through America, that this is why Trump's going to win. And, of course, I didn't go to L.A., New York. I went to Ohio, West Virginia, and all those places where industries have disappeared to China.
Yeah,
Australia a bit, but mostly China. And just by talking, just seeing the third world country that is America, it's not the greatest nation on the planet.
No, it's not.
It's not at all. Just by seeing that and talking to people, and honestly, if you walk around with a camera crew in those places, you're being literally, people come, open their doors, and they come running to you, and they scream for help. Huh? So these are Americans. We're dying out here. Help us! And I said, what did this place used to look like 20 years ago? Oh, it was fantastic, but look at it now. It's a shithole.
Yeah, that's all over America, that.
It's all over.
Yeah.
And I started to think more deeper. And so how did this happen? I always knew it was incorrect. I knew the game was rigged. But then I got deeper into it, and I started researching that and working on that. And so after that, everybody thought I was crazy. How can, because in the media in Europe and everywhere, Trump cannot win, it's impossible. So they thought it was crazy. But then I was proven correct.
Well, so Trump wins and Brexit went through, two things that were never going to happen.
It was never going to happen. So all of a sudden, I was like, people were like, oh my God, this guy, and he's really back. So that was part of the reinvention. And then I did 2 years of the old talk show, but now more talking about issues and, once again, focusing more on hearing the other side of the story, the side the media doesn't tell you.
Yeah.
But I knew going in that they were going to cancel me because it's impossible. I remember the first show I did, I started talking about transgenderism. And at the time in Europe, it was not a topic at all, but I foresaw it coming. So we talked about that. I was super critical of climate change. I had panels there, and I was screaming at these people how much they were lying. And it, of course, I knew it was going to be canceled. And yes, it was canceled. But then I thought, okay, now I want to do my independent thing.
I guess it's like then you're going into a fight that you maybe think, okay, I'm not going to win this. They're going to cancel it, but I'm going to land some big haymakers on them.
I'll go out with bang, but I have no guarantee what's going to happen next. But I knew, so these talk shows, even though I've been doing it, and like you said, I mean, it's not too brag, but I'm a household name in Holland. Course, yeah. I just thought, okay, we'll see where this leads to. But I don't know exactly where, but I cannot continue with the old crap.
Yeah.
And I don't want to listen to stupid people telling me what to say and not to say. I never listen to them anyway. I did my own thing. But it's I foreshadowed that I knew they were going to cancel me, and I knew I would never work in the mainstream media again. So then YouTube, I never utilized. I never used that. And so I created my own show, which I modeled after, say, like the Fox News, you know, with the graphics. And this was six years ago. And that worked really well on YouTube. But I knew before going on YouTube, I knew they were going to censor me too at one point. Yeah. And like I said to you before, I hate censorship.
Yeah.
Especially if it's, you know, if there's no reason to censor anyone or somebody. So I knew they were going to cancel. So I had already started preparing my own website. And then the COVID nonsense happened, and from day one I knew that I'd done more research to, you know, the deeper workings of the world. I knew it was BS. I knew it was BS, and I called it. I went in hard. I went in the biggest possible way. And the funny thing is that the views exploded on YouTube.
Yeah.
The first one got maybe 1 million, and you know, 18 million people live in Holland, so that's a lot. That's a lot of views. And the first week, it went, every episode went up and up and up and up and up. And I tried to just show people in a rational way, look, this is what they claim that's going to happen, but this is actually happening. Stay in the moment.
Yeah.
And you can see what's happening, and something else is going on. So I did that. But of course, when those, and I always thought, how is it possible that in the first week I didn't get shadow banned or whatever? But that was, of course, because the censors, those little boys and little girls from Google and YouTube, they were sitting at home scared of the virus, so they didn't have the tools at their disposal. But after week one, I saw them starting to censor my shows.
Right.
And then I did an episode. Oh, no. And then what happened? I wanted to move it to my own website, but I work through a donation system. So I have no advertisers or nothing. It's just people, if you appreciate what I do, you know, give me whatever. I'm happy with it, anything. And so to move it to your own website is a gamble because, you know, YouTube is so big, and it attracts so many people. Are they going to follow me to my website? So then I couldn't deal with the censorship. Nobody tells me what I can and cannot say, especially when I'm telling the truth or I can really substantiate what I'm saying. So then the censorship started coming. And then one evening I was really contemplating, shall I do it? Shall I make the move? All of a sudden, in the news broke in Holland, all the newspapers. The army has investigated Jensen.nl. So that's my website, Jensen.nl. The army investigated me.
That's insane.
And then I thought, you know what? This is so ridiculous. But I'm going to use this publicity from tomorrow. I'm going to start on my own website, only on my website. And let's see who follows. And so that's what I did. And a lot of people followed me to my own website. They thought it was cool. Donations stayed more or less the same. So I could continue my business. It is a business, like you know.
You've got to survive.
You've got to have some money.
Stuff costs money.
So thanks to the army for investigating me. And I always said on my show, I said, you're more than welcome to investigate me, and hopefully you learn something from it. Hopefully you see, oh my God, this is much more interesting than the mainstream media. But they actually did an inquiry, because, of course, the army shouldn't do that to somebody. And it was actually in the Dutch parliament, the minister responsible for the army apologized and said they should never have investigated Chancellor Van Gaal. I didn't get any millions or I didn't get any money, but it's just ridiculous. But that was the situation
we were in
and in a way still are.
The Netherlands is crazy in that sense. Obviously, well, my dad's, you know, banned.
Yeah.
That in itself is mad.
Yeah. No, but that's why I went to visit your dad last year for the first time, and we did a great show interview, but I stuck up for him from day one after doing my research, of course, and of course I knew about your dad, especially, and I want to thank you for those shows you did with your dad during COVID in the beginning. It was fantastic, because I felt really alone.
Oh yeah, a lot of people did.
I felt really, yeah. But especially if you're in the media and you speak out. I mean, how many people were saying that it was basically just a flu redefined?
Yeah, hardly anyone.
Nobody. Anyone. And then your dad spoke out about it, and you guys did great programs together on that. But yeah, so I started to follow your dad more, If your dad was what they say he is, a Jew hater or whatever, but there is no evidence, nothing there. It's ridiculous. It's once again, you know, they make it appear like it's true, but it's not true. And because if it was true, I would never have him on my show, you know, if he was really an idiot like that. But the opposite is true. He says the opposite. But what's happening to your dad is just unbelievable that somebody's banned. But the only good thing that came out of it is that, with all due respect, I mean, sure, people knew him in Holland, but after this, a lot more people
know
your dad and his work. That's the only good thing that came out of it. But the rest is just ridiculous.
You know, you would have made. I understand you not wanting to be really within the showbiz world and all that kind of stuff, but I'm sure there were probably some all right people in there, law of averages. Do you have any contact with them now? I'm thinking you came out, you said stuff about COVID, you would have been vilified as we all were. Now, all these years later, so much of what we said was that it's actually come true. Those old people that you know from the media, have any of them reached out to you, Robert, and just on, you know,
well, let's,
I thought you were mad, but fair play.
Yeah, but let's start with the people who still work in mainstream media. Zero.
Right, okay.
Zero. And a few people, partly maybe I inspired to follow the truth and follow and do their own thing, and they've done that. And some other people who did speak out a little bit, you know, they were banned too. They couldn't get work, nothing. They couldn't operate within the system anymore, so they had to get out of it. And they started things for themselves as well. But the people, I still know everybody who's on Dutch television.
Yeah.
You know, all the stars. None of them have spoken out.
Would they ever say anything privately? But then have, because I remember as a kid, I went to, I'm trying to think where it was, I think it was Pebble Mill, which in the day was a famous, like, filming place for the BBC, I think, might have been ITV, either way, mainstream. And I remember going with Dad, I was about 13, 14 maybe, and we were sat in the green room, and the presenter came in, and she spoke to Dad, and they had a great conversation. She was saying, I've read this book, my husband is like a big fan, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, this could be all right, because normally you get attacked on the mainstream. I was like, this could be all right. And they went out, and like the curtains came up, blah, 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 and she went in. And I remember seeing Dad's face like, oh, geez, like I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Did any of that go on? You know, we'd have people in the background be like, you know, I kind of think this, I think that. Hello, welcome to the show, and be totally different. You know?
Well, first of all, Gareth, it's just, I detest the mainstream media and the system and the people who work there, the people who cover for it. I detest it. I detest them so much that even if they invite me, and they've stopped inviting me, I will never go on these shows again.
Right.
I don't feel the need to spread the word through that system. I think people also put too much. Yeah, what's the word I'm looking for?
With too much stock in what they have to say.
Yeah. In the power that the mainstream media still has.
Yeah, and we give it.
They give them too much credit. They give them way too much credit. I mean, my audience, from what I see, I also do some live shows, and it's basically people from 18 to 88, which is, it's such broad. It's just people who have to share the same interests and energy. And but the mainstream media audience is just basically dumbed down, retirement age people. And why they put so much credit, politicians and all that, it's just basically because it's still that old system. You know, because the newspaper will talk about this, and they'll go on the talk shows, and they think that's the world. But people who live in the real world, and there's more and more people, they see and live life so differently.
Completely.
And they also have a need for a different life. You know, they want it.
Yeah.
And it's getting worse and worse for them.
But I think people like those mainstream types that live in those bubbles, and politicians live in those bubbles, they are genuinely shocked. Like, they were genuinely shocked when we voted for Brexit. Like, it was a genuine thing on a lot of them. I mean, further up the pecking order, they didn't know what was going on.
That's correct.
But on that face, like, I remember watching the... I remember staying up and watching the reporting of it, and the TV presenters, like, their minds were blown.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's because you've never spent a day in the real world.
Yeah.
We knew that Brexit would come through.
But listen, you have to be almost dumb as a rock to do those jobs in the mainstream media, to be a journalist in the mainstream media. You just have to follow. And I get this question a lot, is why don't people speak out in the mainstream media? Well, it's the same thing for everyone. People are afraid, people have a mortgage, people have a job. And in the mainstream media, there's this animal where, you know, the presenters, whether it's talk show hosts or... It comes from the scarcity of the past that... You know, there were only a few jobs. And it's like, well, I have the job now. If I lose this job, somebody else is going to do the same job. And I want to keep my job. It's well paid. It's all that.
Yeah.
And so it's that animal that sticks around and that seems to be always there. And it's not, there are no fresh faces. There's no fresh voices appearing. And I think also... How I try to explain the mainstream media to people is, because I get this asked a lot, you know, why do people not speak out? Well, first of all, you have the same system as we have in Holland. You have the public broadcaster.
Yeah.
But that's the government.
Oh, 100%.
No, because it's basically they are completely dependent on money from the government. Completely. They are civil servants. And they will do in these moments exactly what they're being told to do, because that's it. It's a problem. And also, I spent a lot of time in the center of politics in The Hague many years ago. So I saw, coming from the media, I saw how it works. I mean, first of all, the politicians, it always works. Get it in the newspaper, then they react. But get it on page 7, you get a small reaction. Get it on the front page, then everybody has an opinion about it. And the second thing is they believe that the mainstream media, the BBC, is theirs. You know, whatever party is in power in your country, the BBC is theirs. They have to say, you know, what we want them to say when it comes. I mean,
they're their microphone.
You can have discussions. You can have discussions. But when there's something big, a war, a pandemic. Oh, my God.
Climate change. Transgenderism.
Transgenderism.
Yeah.
You know, whenever there's something big launched from, well, where. But they have to do it. But commercial television we have as well, of course, like you have ITV. And I always say, you know what it is? People think ITV shows TV programs. No. That's not their business. Their business is selling advertising. The shows are just to get people there, but you know, the only thing a commercial broadcaster thinks about is selling those commercials. Who do they sell them to? The big businesses, the big interests, the corporations.
Yeah.
And don't fall out of line for them, eh? No. You cannot be critical when something big is happening, you know, because then they'll cancel you.
Well, that's what they do, isn't it?
Yeah.
You find if someone publishes something or broadcasts something, everyone goes for the advertiser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop people advertising with them.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, some advertisers are so big and have such influence over programming and over whatever is said because they spend so much money.
The pharmaceutical industry.
Well, that's the best example in the States. Why can no news channel or whatever channel in the States, because they really don't have public broadcasters, but doesn't matter, because if they had one, they would follow the same line.
Yeah.
But if somebody's critical on CNN or Fox, they can't be critical of Big Pharma, pharmaceutical companies. It's by far the number one advertiser in the States.
So you see,
commercial television, people should not see it as, oh, it's the X Factor or whatever shit program. No, they sell advertising. And they're in charge.
Yeah. So it's one of them, isn't it? If the product's free, it's because you're the product.
Yeah.
And it's like that. They're trying to get you there just so they can sell you drugs or an electric car or whatever.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
So this is why there are no critical voices out there. And YouTube is basically the same. I mean,
it is now.
They will cancel you. They will cancel you. So, the last refuge is your own website. Let's see how long we can keep.
To become self-dependent. I remember at the start of COVID, well, even just before COVID, actually, when YouTube suddenly changed their community guidelines, so did Twitter, so did Facebook. Everyone was getting banned left, right, and center. So then Parler came along, if you remember Parler.
Mm.
They came along and were more of a voice for the so-called right. And then suddenly they were taken down. And it was like, hang on, what? And it's because they had Amazon servers. And it's like, do you know what? If like 2% of your whole organization is dependent on them, then you're done. Because they can pull it down at any point.
Yeah.
So it's about, getting independent. Yeah.
So, so it's with these platforms, it's always the same, and it always moves towards. It's like you open up first, remember the first slogan or positioner of YouTube when it first started? Broadcast yourself.
It was, wasn't it?
That was the first one. Broadcast yourself. So an open slab. Everybody could do whatever they want. Whatever. Freedom. Oh, finally. And that was when YouTube was fun, you know.
Yeah, it was great. You could go down some serious rabbit holes.
Oh, it was wonderful to see live rapes and the people killing each other live. My God.
But that was what was happening,
yeah? I mean, you saw also Facebook, you know, people shooting each other live, streaming.
Yeah, beheadings and all that sort of stuff,
I'm not saying that's good. Well, it's for some people, but it's just so they open it up and then slowly it closes.
Yeah,
and that's where we are now. But I mean, to fight against the Googles of this world, I mean, I do my own website. I know how much it costs to have your own servers and all that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It boggles the mind to really comprehend, and also you should ask the question: how the hell can they afford that? Where do they get the money from? How can they run YouTube like that?
Well, money's no object, was it? Bezos was losing about $1 billion a year for the first however many years of Amazon. And you think any normal person that starts a business that starts off losing, I don't know, $100,000 a year goes under.
Don't you sometimes think that like a YouTube or a Google has different technology that doesn't cost all that much? Because if they pay what I have to pay and look at their scale, my God.
Yeah.
There's something murky. I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me. I wonder with Amazon.
Just something I've been thinking about recently.
Because Amazon started off as basically just a book publishing.
Yeah.
And I remember someone pointing out to me the fact that what is the obsession with Amazon and Fire? Because they were making the point that it's like it's book burning, essentially, because they're destroying all the publishers. And I've watched it happen. All the wholesalers go under.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, they called this the Amazon Fire Stick. And then even the book that you're reading the electronic books on was called a Kindle, and it's like kindling to... It's almost like they're telling you that actually they are basically just burning the book industry.
Yeah.
And then obviously then they went out into everything. There's nothing you can't buy on Amazon now. It's, you know, it's a behemoth.
What also annoys me about Amazon, it's the worst thing. I mean, they don't produce anything.
No, they don't.
Nothing, yeah? And look how big they are. But they don't, they just steal. We're in the hands of parasites, all of us.
Oh, aren't we just? I'm just thinking, just to go back, when you're talking about why don't people speak out?
Yeah.
Obviously, you did. Yeah. Do you think maybe there's a connection between the fact that you went into that world almost begrudgingly? Like, you didn't really want to. It wasn't like your dream was to be a talk show host and a television presenter. So therefore, your desire to protect that was far less than someone who maybe had always wanted to be that.
Yeah, so that's a personality thing or a character thing, or, you know, I like to create things. That's I like to create an image or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That I like. And I hate the performance side, and the thing I hate the most is being famous. I hate being recognized. I don't think we're like, as human beings, it's not natural to be recognized, you know, by people who you don't know.
No.
And they think they know you.
How did you deal with that? Being so big in Holland? Because Holland's not a big country.
No,
you can't really go anywhere.
No. It's not a big country. But let me name drop.
Go on.
I had Lionel Richie on the show one day, and he's great. I mean, because he's Mr. Showbiz, and he embraces it all and all that. We were talking about it. I said, but you're recognized everywhere in the world. And I said, I'm just recognized in Holland. He said, yeah, but that's just a scale thing. And in Holland, you know, it's 18 million people, but you can become huge in Holland for 18 million people. And where Lionel Richie is more sort of like, you know, everywhere in the world, you know, everybody sort of knows him. So, and he said that to me. He said, that's if you're in a smaller area, but well. So how did I deal with that? Well, I went out as much as possible when I had a time. Well, not out in the in
out
the
of
town,
Holland.
Out of Holland, you know, you travel and you do that kind of thing. And I never went to showbiz parties or whatever. And I dealt with it that way. I don't get any, you know, inspiration from that. So I get it from other things. And yeah, that's how I dealt with it. And you keep your circle quite small. But then again, how big does your circle need to be?
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. Yeah.
Come on.
I have a handful of friends and that'll do me.
That's fine. That's fine. That's enough. So I think that's basically true for everybody. So in that sense, it doesn't change a lot. But at some point, it was crazy that you couldn't walk the street with a girl or you were photographed and you had a relationship. You could walk the street with a friend or you had a gay relationship, possibly. You know, it was just. But for myself, I never gave a damn what they write. That's maybe another character. I don't care what you write about me. You write about me what you want to write about. I don't care. But sometimes they pull in people from your personal life, you know, from the circle, and they start to do things. And that I found the only thing really annoying. But apart from that, I was able to live with it. And I focused on the work.
Yeah, of course. Say what you want, just make sure you spell my name right.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even care about that.
Do you think then, because I'm thinking, you get away from Holland. Am I right in calling it Holland? Because isn't Holland just six counties? Because I've been
correct. Yeah, you should officially say the Netherlands. And actually, some people in Holland get offended when you call it Holland. Because it's really weird. I until I was 25, I thought I lived in a country called Holland. But then I said it once on the radio, and I got attacked by people. No, we live in Nederland, the Netherlands.
Yeah, I've been corrected before, and I was like, what? I thought it was Holland as well, but there you go. Ruud Gullit played for Holland, I swear he did.
No, the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But you think like when you go through immigration in the States, and I wrote down Holland. No, it's the Netherlands.
You know what I meant, mate.
It's like you've only discovered warm food in the States for the past 6 years, and now you're telling me what country I was born in and lived...
It's mad. No, it's mad. Do you think that the fact that you got out of... Because obviously you've had an awakening, you've seen through stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think that's maybe connected to the fact that you were getting out of the Netherlands so often? Because, you know, people, like, they live in a bubble, and that bubble can be as small as your village or it can be as small as your country. And you don't really understand what the rest of the world's doing. I think America is sometimes guilty of that, that they...
Mm.
You watch American television and it's only about America, and the rest of the world kind of is over there somewhere. I think they do stuff. Do you think the fact that you were going to different countries...
Oh, yeah, but yeah. I always loved to travel, and especially in those times when my means went up, I was able to travel...
it gives you freedom.
...better hotels and better seats on airplanes in the successful times. So that was a good escape. No, because, you know, I always... I don't know. I just like to see what's happening in the world. So... I started doing that last year again on my show. I do a road show, and I just wanted to stay in Europe, but just to see what's happening culturally in Europe now.
Yeah.
After the huge change that it's made for everyone with the COVID hoax, but also with the EU, our countries still, have they lost their own identity? What happened? So I went to Istanbul. I went to Budapest, Prague, Copenhagen. I went to the bullfighting in Sevilla just to see, you know, bullfighting is probably, oh my God, I got a lot in trouble for that. So many people were so upset because I just did a thing about bullfighting because it's so typical Spanish. This is in the Spanish culture, it's so deeply rooted, but it's not shown on TV anymore. You're not allowed to show only on some local stations, but not on national TV. This used to be a big event.
But just because you're reporting on it doesn't mean you're not.
No, but that's what I said a million times. I said a million times. I'm just showing you this is their culture and is it surviving? So I spoke to young Spanish people and older Spanish people, and you see within the generations how is that shifting now? That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Oh, I was cruel to animals, and how can you do this, and how can you do that? But that's just showing, you know, I think also the... it was very interesting to see that a lot of countries still have that identity, and that's different from other countries, because that's what I wanted to show.
Yeah.
But with the younger generation, it starts to disappear. It starts to become more monolithic. People start to think the same way. And what I took from that is that I'm actually now even more amazed. How did we get psychologically tricked into always thinking about some other place that we need to save or where it's so bad? And we need to step in, and we completely look away from what is happening in our own countries or in our own surroundings. We're looking, constantly looking outside. Ukraine, Russia, Iran, America. It's like so many people, and probably also people who view you maybe more my audience, that there are people in Holland, they're so obsessed with Trump, and they want Trump to succeed. And I'm always like, why do you want Trump to succeed? He wants to put tariffs on everything. He wants to make your life more expensive. Why do you care about Ukraine? I mean, gas prices are through the roof. We've stopped producing gas in the Netherlands. But everybody is always concerned about everybody else. And it has to be the psychological trick of them. That, who are they?
To take your eyes off the price.
What's happening right in front of you. I made the analogy, like the best thing is how people live nowadays is when you see an airport. We travel through, you know, when people go to the airport. Airports are horrible places nowadays. Horrible places.
They're horrible, yeah.
So what do people do? They wake up in the morning and they find their comfort zone. But they know they have to go somewhere and through the airport, and they have to go to the next comfort zone. And that only comes when you've arrived. So people put on these blinders and they go through the whole process And they don't look around what's happening in the airport. But you see a lot of airports nowadays, in Europe too, where there's homeless people sleeping everywhere, where it looks like the third world. It's horrible. But people zoom out, they go to their next comfort place. And then they don't see what's happening around them.
Yeah.
And it's basically...
See, I do the opposite of that. Well, I'm an observer. So if I go to an airport, it doesn't matter what time it is, if it's 6 a.m, I sit in the pub, I get a pint. Because it's the only place that it's acceptable to have a beer at 6 a.m is an airport.
Yeah.
And I just look, and I just watch people. I don't know, you're right, most people don't do that. Most people actually are like that.
Yeah.
Phone's on charge.
Yeah.
Bam, bam, bam. But for me, I'm literally like, man, people are weird.
Yeah, yeah. But, okay, but you observe it the way I do it. It's like, you know, you have the front row seats of a freak show.
It's a little bit like that.
It's a little bit like that.
They probably think the same about me, and that's fine.
But, yeah. But that's fine. Yeah. Well, they don't see you.
Well, yeah, maybe not, to be fair, yeah.
They don't see you. But I've been obsessed lately. I don't know if you want to hear what I'm obsessed with.
You've set it up now.
I've been obsessed lately. It's so weird because what happened to with COVID, and maybe this resonates with you, but I'd love to hear you. You know, it's taken away sort of my enjoyment, but it's the last thin veneer of the enjoyment of the bullshit. Football, I cannot watch football anymore. Ever since those empty stadiums, and ever since all those matches, and still to this day, have to be stopped because people pass out or get heart attacks in the crowd.
Yeah.
And wasting this emotional energy, because that's what you saw. I don't want to ruin football for you, but I know your family's big.
I agree. Yeah.
But when they took out the people in the stadium. And they put in those sounds, and you actually saw what was happening on the field. 95% of these, 98.5% of these matches are incredibly boring.
Yeah, they are. You're right.
I appreciate the talent of these guys, but and the female football players, of course, the talent to miss a penalty from that close and shoot it over the stadium. why are you keeping your Jeremy Paxman face?
Was that what I was doing? I'll be honest with you. When you said about the female footballers, I thought you were going in the direction of them in little shorts. That's where I thought you were going.
Well, then I'd prefer to see some supermodels playing football.
You are right, though.
Okay. So football was boring. Yeah. And the only thing I still liked, I mean, movies I cannot watch anymore. I've seen enough, I can see it in real life now, that how robots are killing human beings. I've seen that. But the last thing I liked was tennis. And but now the final was, the final of Wimbledon. Wimbledon, beautiful tournament. I win many times, but now I don't want to sit there after seeing everybody applaud that monster.
From AstraZeneca. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I can remember it, yeah.
She invented, or she was the creator of the vaccine that got us all together. Everybody stood up, and this lady or this thing was sitting there.
They made a figurine of her, mate. They made a plastic figurine of her.
Yeah?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I don't know who's buying that.
Wow.
No, I know what you mean. I'm the same.
So tennis came on. And I was going to watch the final, because I saw the one in Paris between Alcaraz and Sinner, and it was fantastic, but it was 5.5 hours. And I go, what the hell am I, again, 5.5 hours of my time? These guys get £3 million. It doesn't matter about the money, I don't care about the money, but all right, why am I investing? So now 2-3 weeks later, it's the same guys playing again. I should be excited, everybody's building it up. I couldn't do it. So I started to watch on YouTube, and I watched 9 hours straight, of people losing it on airplanes and airports.
Right.
and I go, you know, but these people, if you walk through airports, you see them. But, and only this has to happen for them to...
To snap.
To snap and go, I need water! I mean, you should watch those videos. I was observing, but I was laughing, but also, you know, this is what it takes. Everything is, and we saw that too with COVID. How easy.
Oh, if people stood within 2 meters of you, and someone would freak. I remember those videos too.
But how easy it is for society to
completely. No, I was a season ticket holder at Derby County for years. Yeah. And I must admit, like I loved football, and I still love playing football and all that kind of stuff. But most of it was the banter between the crowds, mm-hmm. between the away fans and the home fans. And actually, you're right, with the exception of a few moments, it's an hour and a half of a bunch of lads chasing a bag of wind around. It is. And so when you took the fans out, it showed, that without them, you don't really have a product.
You're really one of those guys who likes the banter.
I love the banter. I love it.
You fought.
All that stuff. Yeah. I wouldn't really give it, but I like taking it. But every now and then, you know, because I used to sit in the South Stand, which was the in Europe it'd be the ultras, but we don't really have that in English football anymore. So you're right next to the away fans, and every now and then you'd go and someone would chuck 50p at you, and you realise that, you know, that could have taken a kid's eye out, mate. Come on, grow up. Yeah. But with a verbal banter, I loved it, mate.
Yeah?
Yeah. They'd just be shouting abuse at you, and you'd just be waving.
What's your favourite insult? Or the best one you've heard? Because the best ones are with humour, you know, like where there's something funny about it.
Do you know what? There was a lad who was two rows in front of me, and he was a big, big lad. And he had a Derby County shirt on, and it was all rippled like that. And the sponsor in those days was Just Eat. Right, which is a food delivery company in England. And some guy was literally just there. I think he was a Cardiff City fan, so he had a broad, like, Welsh accent, which made it funny. Was like, that's a sponsor, not an instruction, lad. And I remember the lad turned around, and he kind of wanted his fellow fans to stick up for him, but everyone was kind of like, I can't, he's got you. He's got you, lad.
Oh, that's
that was
good.
A funny
that's
one for good. Me.
But you know what? Something, all of that, I don't know where that came from. Pops in my brain, in my head. I don't know where that came from. But I think this was something that you posted on Twitter, you know, the formerly known as X.
Yeah.
There's Jeremy Kyle. There's Jeremy Paxman again. I think it was you. There was like a brawl in Tenerife or something, or Gran Canaria, where some of your fellow countrymen...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fellow countrymen. And they smashed up a restaurant or a bar, and they were fighting, you know, really those old scenes from the...
From the 80s,
from the 80s football. And I think you correctly and said, you know, 3 months ago, these people sat scared at home, virus.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah. I posted a few like that. I remember no one would come out to protest. We were in England and the protest had 400 or 500 people. And then there was something called I'm trying to think of what it was. I think it was the European Super League. That was it. And these football clubs were talking about leaving the Premier League and going into this. And all their fans came out, tens of thousands of them on the streets. And I'm like, mate, they had you following arrows around Tesco's, mate. And you said nothing. But your football team might be going to play in a different league and suddenly, do you know what I mean, you're kicking over a wheelie bin. It's mad. It's mad how people prioritise.
And I think I miss it a little bit, that last bit of veneer of superficiality. But it's so ridiculous to waste all that emotional energy on sports or that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's trying to find that balance, I think. Because I'm the same as you with football. Not so bothered.
But what do you still like?
I still like ice hockey. These guys, I mean,
that's my tennis.
Well, they get paid well, but you know, they play 82 games and they beat the living hell out of each other, and they smile at the camera. And they've got 4 teeth missing. Like they're invested in it, and that aspect of it I like. And actually, during the whole COVID stuff, hockey, because there was quite a few states in America that were trying to fight back a bit, it wasn't so bad.
I thought the same thing with tennis, by the way, that I could watch tennis without the audience, actually, or without the people sitting there, without the crowds. Yeah. I actually prefer it. I don't want to hear some 16-year-olds screaming, shut up, he's serving, stupid cow. But and so I prefer it because I like the talent.
Yeah.
I like the talent.
But football needs it.
Football needs it. Oh, my God. You need the graphics. You need all the interviews. You need all the replays. You need all the angles. You need all the flashbacks.
Yeah. Football's strange at the minute. I'm not sure where it goes from here, really. Yeah. You know, because the money in it is... We've gone totally off topic, but whatever. But
why?
Money becomes...
Why? It's all the same thing we're talking about.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's true, yeah. But you know where the money gets to such a point where you're like, this isn't sustainable. This whole thing's just going to blow up.
Yeah.
Eventually, but mind you, they've been saying that for 20 years.
Yeah, I don't know, because it is giving the people what they want.
But it is extraordinary,
and it is distracting people.
Well, it is true, but you go to the point where this guy is like £180 million, and you're like, and this kid's starving to death. Like, what the frick? Do you know what I mean? Like that separation of realities is just extraordinary, isn't it?
It's not your best analysis of the day.
You don't think so? I don't.
No, sorry,
I struggle
Gareth.
With it.
Of course,
though.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense.
You can find money to buy a guy to run around and chase a ball,
yeah.
But we can never find enough money to help people that need it, genuinely need it, you know. And it's like,
yeah, but that's a whole other conversation. But if you look at football, it's a way to keep people. To keep the consciousness limited and the focus limited, and you give a lot of people some enjoyment. So it doesn't matter what that costs, because on the other hand, it's being made for the people who benefit the most.
Yeah,
and that is correct. That's not the person who lives in poverty.
I think if you understand, because if I, you know, go to America and watch a New York Rangers game, I can guarantee if I post a picture from inside the rink, at least one of the first three comments will be bread and circuses. Every time,
yeah.
Without fail. And it's like, I know that, but I like bread and I like circuses.
Yeah.
And as long as you know that that's what it is, and I'm not going to go out into the car park and have a fight with another fan over a game of hockey.
Hmm.
As long as you know what it is. Like, you enjoy tennis. Yeah, it's hella talented. It's great.
Yeah.
I'll sit and eat strawberries.
But there's not a lot left for me when it comes to that. Because it's basically entertainment. And do I miss it? Yeah, maybe you do miss it a little bit if you're honest. If you're honest, because, you know, it's nice to spend a few hours...
Away from reality.
Away from reality.
Yeah.
But I'm constantly confronted with it. With the boredom.
Yeah.
And seeing through it. But do you still... For example, you know, I used to like going to the States. Because I thought it was something that it wasn't, obviously. But it was also keeping yourself dumb and stum. And, entertainment. The country is made, created. And it was just entertainment. So I was in that business. And it was way ahead of Europe. When it came to entertainment, radio, television, the way it's produced, the way it's made, everything. Nowadays, not anymore. But I used to love going to the States. I look forward to going to the States. Now, I'd rather go to Afghanistan.
There's no one there now. They're all coming in.
But this is actually, I know. But this is actually true. I prefer to go to Afghanistan. The more interesting.
Well, yeah, there's a culture.
But America, it's dropped down. So
well, it's changed. I used to love going to New York. I loved New York. The last two times I've gone to New York, I was looking around me going, oh, this place is a shithole.
Oh.
But last year I went to Nashville. That was different. I enjoyed Nashville. Still had a vibe about it. I don't know if it's just because of the music thing, but I'm sat in a bar eating breakfast with a pint at 10 in the morning. There's a full band playing. I was like, no, this is kind of
right. Yeah.
But then if I live there, I'm not doing that.
No.
So it's one of them, isn't it?
No.
Tourist life is different, isn't it, I guess?
No, you don't go to Graceland three times per week.
No.
If you live in Memphis. No. But America is like New York. I thought it was like an inspiring place, you know. It's like you feel the energy. But the last time I was there, I was looking around Times Square and I said, what the hell am I looking at? I'm looking at commercials. I'm looking at advertisement. That's it.
Yeah. And everything you recognize is from a film or from an advert.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you go to a restaurant and you pay a fortune and you have to pay 20% service charge and 20%. I mean, it's just... And the nice places have all closed down.
Yeah.
It's
everything's a chain in America now as well. Those independent bars, you have to get right out. into the suburbs to find those now. Now, it's if you go out for dinner, oh, I fancy a nice restaurant. We got TGI Fridays. It's like, well, I've got, there's one of them in Derby.
And that's also happening in London and other big cities.
Yeah.
That all the restaurants, the smaller restaurants, and especially because of COVID, you know, they can't survive rent, staff, food costs. But the restaurants that do survive are once again basically owned by a handful of people, and they're luxurious in a way. And you think it's different restaurants, but there's always a group behind it, whether it's the Tao group in Las Vegas or whether it's the Amazonico group from, well, they're based in Madrid, but it's a Turkish owner. It's like...
Or even PepsiCo that own all these different other fast food outlets. They're all owned by the same people.
So, less choice, less fun. But I still like to look for the unique things. And you can still find it, of course.
Yeah.
But it's not that... It's not, the superficiality doesn't... supply me with that anymore. No.
Let's end on something positive then, because we've just whinged for about the last sort of 10 minutes about the way this stuff.
You felt it was whinging?
Well, I was whinging. I don't know if you were. I was definitely whinging, because I feel like the country, like, I remember listening to...
I enjoy ever seeing everything go down.
I remember listening...
I watch the breaking news now, and I go, oh, at least 100,000 dead police.
I remember being a kid and listening to grown-ups, you know, talk about the old days. And it's like, yeah, of course it was better for you in the old days. You were young. But I've become that guy now where I'm look back at the 80s and I'm like, you could do this, you could do that. You came home when the streetlights came on. And if you didn't want to come home, you lied to your parents and said the streetlight didn't work. There was no mobile phones. There was no bullshit. It was, if someone was a dick, someone slapped them and then you all got on with it. It's totally changed now.
For you?
Yeah, and when
what do you think for young people? I love talking to young people.
I mean, Derby's an interesting place where we are now. The city of Derby is an interesting place.
It's the most interesting place I've ever been to.
It's in terms of trying to work out what the hell's going on, it's quite strange. It's changed a lot in the last 10 years, and I don't really recognise it anymore. It's quite weird. I live out in the countryside now. But what makes you optimistic then? You know where, like, say, young people are still full of optimism, they've not had the hope kicked out of them yet?
Well, here's the thing. What I want to say about young people, because I test myself, I hold myself to the same count as you, that, like, okay, if you get older, you don't want to become that grumpy guy that everything was so great.
Yeah.
But I don't even claim that it was so great when I was in my 20s or 18s. I don't have that nostalgic, those nostalgic emotions. But I, when I talk to young people, I don't get the sense, I know they like to travel, and of course they have the youthful energy, which is great, because, you know, that comes naturally. You have to make something, and the people who want to make something out of it, I can still see that, you know, they have
that drive. Yeah.
But you also see a lot of people who are just basically just dumbed down, numbed down, don't want to work anymore, and don't want to do it. And I can see why they're saying that, because, and this is the biggest problem, of course. Young people cannot afford their own house, cannot buy their houses. They have student debt. It's criminal what's been done to that generation. Eh? And it's easy to say, oh, they whine too much, or, you know, they whinge. You know, no, this is factually true. I mean, the jobs are more difficult to get. The good jobs are more difficult to get. You cannot buy your own home.
Yeah,
it's impossible for them, and I don't see for a lot of people how, if this system continues, how that's ever, apart from you own nothing, but you'll be happy, and living with your parents until you're 35 years old. But and they complain about that, and I don't think somebody complained about that much 25 years ago.
No, I think you're right. I remember with me at my age. I'm 43 now. And I tended to knock around with people 2, 3, 4 years older than me. I had an older sister who was 7 years older, and I kind of knocked around with people in that kind of gap. And a lot of those bought their first houses when they were 45, when their parents died, because they couldn't afford them either. Mm. And even for the last decade, that's been the case here. And it's just getting worse.
Yeah.
It's just getting
worse. And that's really sad. And that's, and the student debts.
That's insane.
Insane.
Insane. You can go and do a, you know, a £40,000 debt for 3 years of doing modern art or, do you know what I mean? Like Russian history.
But it's
something you're never going to use.
It's for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It comes on your credit record. It's horrible what they've done to that generation.
Yeah.
And okay, so but what am I optimistic about? People ask me about that a lot. Well, I'm very optimistic for people who want to find a way out. But I think if you want to find a way out and you want to lead a inspiring, fulfilled life, you have to be very creative. And you have to start looking for different angles and different things to do and approaching life differently and
think outside the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm optimistic for those people. I'm also optimistic that there will be humanism still left in the world. But I'm realistic that, and we're racing towards that, and perhaps I underestimated that, that with all the technology and the control systems and all that, that goes rapidly. But there are always ways out.
Yeah. I think there's two sides of everything in the sense that the technology itself isn't necessarily inherently evil.
No.
It's one of them, isn't it? It's like this can be used to make a great life, or this can be used to control
everyone. It's the people who control it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what the thinking is behind the use of the technology.
Yeah.
And whether that's good thinking or destructive thinking.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it's the former.
And the worst, there's always hope, Ken.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mate, without it, I've got nothing. You know, no, I think unfortunately, the worse things get, the more people speak up and the more people stand up. People think I'm up against the wall, I may as well start swinging because what else am I going to do? And at that point, that's that turning point. I think, like you said, we're getting close to it because we're staring down the barrel of the gun.
I thought during COVID, I thought, how bad does it have to get?
Well, yeah, I was very surprised. And even the British government came out and said that they were surprised how compliant people were.
Yeah.
That was a bit of an embarrassment for the nation, I felt. But then
protest
movement
stood
up. But
trust the plan. All these people will be arrested.
Oh, don't even get me started. Don't even get me started. And you can't laugh at it because you get called black-pilled. If you don't trust Trump.
So what?
And now here we are, mate. Do you know what I mean? Where are those Epstein files? Where are they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, let's get into an hour of Trump discussion.
Oh, mate. Yeah, we should do that. We should do that another time.
No, but he's in the same boat as Alex Jones. So that's why you don't recognize him, and that's why he does what he does. He's under pressure from many angles. It's not just one, but, you know, it comes from one point where they can control him, and that's it.
Oh, he's controlled, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, come on, and he's 79 years old. You know, when he's done, he's 82, 83. You know, he gives himself a pardon, because presidents can do that, huh? They can give you...
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, so everything will disappear.
Yeah.
On the last day, before he steps out of office, he'll sign a pardon. He's clear. His family is set up in the Middle East, in Gaza,
in the Trump
hotels.
Yeah.
And Jared Kushner will make his 10th billion that year. Ivanka happy. Ivanka Trumpovich.
Mate.
But that's just how it goes. That is how it's going to go. So,
yeah, unfortunately,
why be so upset about it?
I just hate injustice.
Yeah, but that's true. Oh, I love injustice. No. Let me counter that with I love injustice. No, of course, but if it's going to happen, if that's the game, might as well forget and focusing on
what can you change?
Yeah.
What can you make better?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. And what is... Yeah. Because this is all a distraction.
Yeah. And if you start at the beginning in terms of yourself, your family, then extended family, friends, it grows. in terms of being the best version of yourself, creating the best scenario for yourself and those around you.
Because you didn't really think that Bill Gates and Fauci were going to be arrested, did
Not really, no. As soon as they said that 30,000 kids had been released into Central Park from underground tunnels and there wasn't a single bit of camera footage in the most one of the most surveilled cities on the planet, I started to question the plan. Wasn't really trusting it at that point.
Oh, by the way, but we'll get into that next time. I invented the whole Q hoax.
I thought that. I suspected it. Robert, mate, I've really enjoyed chatting.
I love you too.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and you. And hopefully we'll see each other again. I'm sure we will. And to everyone at home, thank you so much for tuning in. And we'll see you next Sunday when we'll be bringing the fire once again. Good day.
The media toont zijn ware gezicht. Maar Robert Jensen buigt voor niemand. Steun het echte geluid via jensen.nl en wees onderdeel van de vooruitgang. Het vrije geluid laat zich niet censureren. jensen.nl